Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Our guest in studio is the chairman of the Convention on the Constitution of Ireland. You would probably know him as he was the chair and the world leader of concern worldwide, the Irish founded charity that we have been indeed privileged to be associated with since the early days of our radio. That brings us back at least four decades. For a number of those decades, we have known our guest, Tom Arnold, in varied capacities. Before he was the chief executive of Concern, he served as Assistant Secretary General and Chief Economist in the Department of Agriculture and Food in Ireland, and has been on so many high-level bodies having, again, to do with Ireland and beyond, the UN Millennium Project's Hunger Task Force, Irish Hunger Task Force, UN Central Emergency Response Fund, SERF Advisory Group, European Food. Anyway, look, that's I have read everything thus far. I will put away my notes and welcome our friend Tom Arnold. And Fauci, you're very welcome back to us.
It's great to be back, Adrian. Thanks.
And it's great also, obviously, to know, though we're not surprised, that when the Taoiseach and when the Taoiseach announced your appointment as chairperson of the Convention on the Constitution of Ireland, I think those of us who know you say, well, that's not everybody, A, would want it in the first place, and definitely very few would make any fist of it. So we're very happy, tongue-in-cheek, but we're very happy that, A, that the government did see fit to address the situation, and indeed to pick the right man for the job. When you were approached, and when you were asked about the changes and changing, you know, the Constitution and making changes to the Constitution of Ireland, it must have dawned on you that this was a mammoth task. Mm. We're talking about a constitution that's older than
either of us.
Nearly older than the two of us put together. But it is the constitution. Can you talk about how the constitution that needs to be ratified?
Yes.
How long is that in place, and what amendments have there been through the years?
Well, the current Irish constitution dates from 1937. And that was, if you like, a revised constitution from the 1922 constitution, which came in with the establishment of the Irish Free State, and which very much reflected the Anglo-Irish Treaty of 1921. And it was when Éamon de Valera came in the 1930s, he was committed to reforming the constitution, the 22 constitution, because of its connections with the treaty. And so the constitution then, the 1937 constitution, very much reflected the spirit of the age. And there's, you know, for example, one of the provisions that we were asked to look at was the article about the role of women in the home, which is quite outdated and which was... So anyway, over the years, or indeed over the decades, I think governments felt that the Irish, the 37 constitution needed to be looked at, needed to be changed. And when the incoming government in 2011 came in, they had a commitment that they would set up a convention to look at the constitution. It consists of 100 people, 66 citizens chosen to be representative of the population, 33 politicians, of which four are from Northern Ireland, and myself as chair. And they gave us an agenda of 8 issues to look at, and a 9th issue, sort of any other business.
Right.
So we're working our way through those 8 issues. We've been given a year to do our work. We started in January and we'll finish in December. Unless, of course, there is agreement that there are to be other issues looked at, in which case we probably need an extension of our time.
Right. Having said that, though, what makes this not more the same is that there is actually a commitment this time to actually bring the report, to bring your findings and to take those onto the floor of the Oireachtas, the Irish Parliament, the seat of government, rather than file them away with some of the other reports that I'm sure were very meaningful as well.
There were good reports to revise the Constitution in other decades, but none of them actually ultimately came to anything. This time, the government has made a commitment that they will debate each report that we produce within 4 months of receiving it, and subsequent to that debate in the Oireachtas, they would take a decision as to whether or not they should move to a referendum. So that's, we are, if you like, the first of a three-part process,
right,
which is ultimately, I think, going to lead to constitutional change.
Let me just ask you, because we are in hundreds and more hundreds of people were here for the gathering Cooper Union in New York here to mark the 15th anniversary of the ratification of the Good Friday Agreement, and plenty of room there for interpretation and some political dissent, and what you would expect anyway from hundreds of people. Could and would it be fair to say that if we go back through the decades, you know, in the last century, that even though the reports might have been meaningful, that there was a sensitivity with respect to, you know, bigger problems, you know, obviously a lot of frustration and a tremendous amount of political dissent and, in fact, violence in the north of Ireland, so that it wouldn't have, you know, it wouldn't be getting the attention that it now can. Is that fair?
It is, and I think, you know, we do know that until the Good Friday Agreement was signed, that the issue of Articles 2 and 3 of the Constitution continued to be a very real political issue within Ireland. And it was the signature of the Good Friday Agreement that facilitated then a subsequent referendum to modify those articles.
Just give us a brief description of those.
Well, the Articles 2 and 3 effectively represented a claim, by the Republic, that Northern Ireland was part, if you like, of Ireland, and that was a claim that caused a lot of sensitivity, particularly with the Unionist population. So when the Good Friday Agreement was changed, the language in that article changed.
Right.
And the other thing, of course, about the Good Friday Agreement was that it was registered as an international agreement between the United Kingdom and Ireland.
Yeah.
So what I think, and the other thing to acknowledge is that among in our the resolution passed by the Houses of the Oireachtas setting mm-hmm. up the convention, we were asked specifically to take account of the provisions of the Good Friday Agreement and the St. Andrews Agreement. So
that's right.
In a way,
yeah.
it has given maybe possibilities to think about the future of
yeah.
the island, which were not there before in previous decades.
You know, of the eight issues which became, you know, part of the task forces, that's, you know, loosely what this is, there are some wildly thorny issues that obviously, you know, may shock a lot of people, not just in Ireland, but here. One would imagine that, for instance, if you took the provision for same-sex marriage, if that, and that issue obviously is very much alive here and highly controversial, and it is obviously it's moving, it's gaining momentum and acceptance. But one might say within the Constitution of Ireland, would that the order in which it shows up on the eight items, is this like in sequence? Is this an order of, or is it just a list?
No, we've already dealt with it in April.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously when the Irish Constitution was written and passed in 1937, it was quite clear that the underlying assumption was that marriage was between a man and
right.
a woman. Straightforward. Now, there's been obviously certain changes over the years, but what we were asked to look at was whether or not the Irish Constitution should be changed to allow for the possibility of same-sex marriage.
Right.
And actually, the Convention, having considered it, voted substantially to say, yes, those changes should be made. What we did was there, we looked at the experts who were, you know, analysing this issue. They not only looked at what would happen if there was to be a change, they also looked at all the other legal changes that would be
right,
required
right.
If this change were to be made. And important issues like adoption, would gay couples mm-hmm. have the right to adopt? And a lot of other things as well. So what we had was, I think, a very, by and large, respectful, level-headed
right.
discussion. And a conclusion at the end of the weekend by 79% that people were in favour of making a change. Now,
right.
the government will have to consider that report, ultimately, and
right.
will have to decide whether they will hold a referendum or not.
And I think that's good to point out as well, is that, you know, you are going to present a report that will go to the government, and for the government, they're already committed. I mean, they do have to... This is not going to be done in the secrecy of, you know, backroom politics. This is major stuff.
Well, it's very out in the open.
Yeah.
And the other openness about it is that clearly these reports will be debated in both houses of the Oireachtas,
right.
the Dáil and the Seanad. So the elected representatives will have their say.
Mm.
Obviously, the elected, the 29 politicians from the Republic have already contributed, if you like, in the debates in the convention, but the rest of them will have the chance to have their say when they're brought to the House of the Oireachtas.
When there is something that has somehow managed to exist through the decades and going back now, you know, for such a long time that, for instance, you mentioned before the provision, the amending of that clause and the role of women in the home, you know, and for that matter, encouraging, you know, greater participation of women in public life. Wouldn't one be inclined to say, well, was the Constitution, which has existed up until now, was that like a Chinese menu? You could, like, skip over the parts that you figure were outdated and feel that most of that say, oh, yeah, well, those were the old days. I mean, part of what the government is trying to do here is to make the Constitution and the amendments to the Constitution very meaningful so that there won't be a, you know, an a la carte kind of Constitution that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we deal with the eight issues we've been asked to deal with, even if you put them all together, they won't add up to, if you like, fundamental change of the Constitution.
Right.
And but I think what it will do is maybe raise the question as to whether a broader, more substantive reform needs to be done. And that's perhaps where the any other business comes in. But fundamentally what we're about here, I think, is really refining and changing the words we use in the Constitution to reflect the values of Ireland in the 21st century. And let, you know, if there's change now, we really have to think in terms of 25 or 30 years. I mean, it's not just for today. It's really to, in a sense, reflect a changing Ireland and be appropriate to a changing Ireland.
Right. Now, let me ask you about, say, some of, the inclusion of the Constitution, for instance, of blasphemy. Many would skip over that one and say, what? That is part of...
Well, you see, that is, again, if you like, a legacy of the 1930s. And I don't think there's any... I think it was meant to just give protection against, you know, disrespect to organized religion. I think that was behind it. But I think it's very probably outdated at this stage. And there's nobody advocating that it should remain. Mm. But I think what it will give rise to, that debate will move into somewhat wider territory. Because, you know, for example, the preamble of the Irish Constitution has many references to God.
Right.
And I know, for example, the Humanist Society in Ireland are saying, well, actually, we are now a much more diverse society. You know, multicultural, etc., and so on. We're not certainly dominated by any one church any longer. So maybe we need to change the preamble as well. That's the sort of thing people are saying.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. I mean, I think obviously there are still important religious values in the country as well. And ultimately, this should be about trying to find a new balance which reflects today's Ireland.
If you want to get the smallest taste of what's ahead of you, you might want to Google U.S. Constitution and God. And there are a tremendous number of people of all religions who would move that particular aspect for consideration way up to the top of the list. Mm. And I think that what will probably come out of this, hopefully what will come out of this, will be a definition of what, you know, what this was meant to be in the first place, and definitely define it for this century.
You see, the Irish Constitution in 1937 it did reflect spirit of the age, and it wasn't excessively, I mean, by comparison to what other countries were writing at the time, it wasn't, if you like, excessively Catholic. I mean, it was quite Catholic, but that did reflect
the
reality.
Catholic and patriotism, you know, that was only divided by a slanted line anyway, within the framework of, you know, of what they were trying to... Would it have been perceived that the Constitution as ratified back in 1937, that was kind of hastily put together to update the earlier one, which was obviously...
It wasn't that hasty. I mean, process started in 1934, and it was De Valera had actually a big hand in it, and other influence as well. It had a remarkable draftsman, a man called John Hearn, who was subsequently Irish ambassador to Canada.
Right.
And I think... A brilliant man.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think most of the serious historians and jurists would say that, by and large, the Irish Constitution of 1937 has served the country well. There are obviously a number of pretty obvious changes that need to be taking place. A number of have taken place over the years. But by and large, it has served the country well. But, you know, it does need re-looking at in the 21st century.
Yeah. Now, there are some issues here, and they are thorny issues right in the United States and here in New York City. There's one, for instance, one of the issues is, should the voting age in Ireland be reduced to age 17? We have, of course, one of the strictest rules here with regard to alcohol consumption. Mm-hmm. We have, of course, we devote a tremendous amount of time to making sure that when teenagers arrive at a certain age, I think it's perhaps 18 now, that they can be drafted and they can be sent to any part of the world, into war zones.
Yeah.
But the same people who are approving of that also, and particularly in New York City, and now Jersey, of course, is catching on to it, is that they want to, by law, prevent somebody until they're 21 years of age from buying a pack of cigarettes in a store. There's a lot of room and area for not just conflict, but for actually evaluating and bringing a degree of fairness to this. Mm. Are you concerned that your group, because you're chairing 100 people, may indeed, elect to bring your report to the Oireachtas when deep down in your heart and soul you know that the Irish government representatives are going to tear it apart because obviously what your convention, what your research is doing, it is combining the wish list. Mm. Is there a possibility that having, that your representative group present something that a government will either shy away from, that they'll say, God, no, we wouldn't touch that.
We don't know. I mean, our only power really is the power of recommendation, and it is ultimately to Parliament and government to take it then on further. But on that particular issue of the voting age, for example, we were asked to look at whether should it be reduced from 18 to 17, because there are many things that young people of the age of 17 can currently legally do, but are not currently entitled to vote. Mm-hmm. And when we discussed it, and we had two sides of the argument, the National Youth Council came in and they argued it should be brought down to 16, not 17. And then we had a group called the Association of Irish Care Workers who expressed a concern. They said that bringing it down to 16 or 17 would hasten what they call the adultification of children. So that in a sense that children were being asked to face up to adulthood earlier than perhaps they might. Yeah. Anyway, what the convention decided, having listened to all of these, decided by a narrow majority, only 52%, that indeed the voting age should be reduced from 18, but there was a recommendation it should be brought back to 16 rather than 17. But it was also an acknowledgement that you shouldn't just do that on its own. It needed to go hand in hand with, better civic education in schools, you know, greater awareness of all.
Yeah.
And so it was a very healthy debate. And in a way, what we will be in our final report giving is not just the result of the vote, but the nature and the content of the debate.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of substance then that the politicians take and run with.
Right. And it also gives them, you know, the benefit of the research. You're not talking about any old body, this is a very representative, let's go back to, again, outside the political field, a very representative group of age, of different brackets, of none of whom, by the way, are on any payroll. They are, in fact, this is something that they feel very strongly about. I'm sure there's got to be a lot of room for rolling of the eyes and dissent and whatever, but that's how that's what conventions are.
I mean, the basic principle here is that ordinary citizens have a good deal of common sense, and if asked, will maybe arrive at sensible conclusions about what they want for the future of the country. I think it's as simple as that. It's similar in a way to the principle of a jury service.
Mm.
You're bringing ordinary people together, you're putting facts before them, and you're asking them to make a decision.
And in fact, nobody is being forced onto this committee at all. It's not like
people had to be asked. They had to be willing to give up 9 weekends in the course of the year that nobody's getting paid. And I think we've a lot of people who, particularly as the process has gone on, are really committed to it, feel they're involved in something important and something historic, and feel privileged to be part of it. And that's how I feel myself.
There's nearly a double barrel issue here that you've broken into two, but review of the Dáil's electoral system. Can you give us a... that's broad enough.
We have, that's the terms of reference, but we have, as an electoral system in Ireland, as you well know, it's a quite unusual one. It's proportional representation,
right,
and it's multi-seat constituencies. And a lot of people are very attached to that system, but there are people who have said, well, it's part of the reason why we're in the mess we're in, because there's too much focus on localism, there's not enough focus on the bigger national issues. So we've been asked to look at this, and we examined it in the first instance last weekend. We decided that we would, when we come back for a second weekend, have a look at one other system alongside the current system, the pros and the cons of it.
Right.
And but even if then there are to be, the convention was to vote to retain the current system,
right,
there's a number of other issues, such as the number of TDs, the size of constituencies, whether or not, you know, cabinet ministers should be appointed from outside the political system. They're going to be considered as well, those issues. And so I think again,
but it also comes at a time when there is very serious consideration, to whether, you know, the Senate in Ireland should be abolished altogether. So this is there's a very good reason for many people here to not just say, that's a nothing. Like any one of those, for instance, if the Senate were to be, abolished, or if that was which is a possibility, it's not a probability, but it is a possibility, wouldn't that radically change, your agenda here.
It would radically change, because the Senate is referred to in the Constitution, I think, 75 times. So if the Senate is to be abolished and there is to be a referendum of that in the autumn, it will have big implications for the Constitution. Now, we were, some people felt we should be asked to look at this as a convention. The government didn't ask us. In fact, it was outside of our terms of reference.
Okay.
And in fact, we voted not to look at it last weekend.
Let me ask you about one of the issues here that would have obviously a lot of a bearing on the diaspora, and indeed it would have a lot of bearing on the massive outpouring of immigrants, not many of them too happy with Ireland and forced to emigrate at this stage of the game, but voting rights for immigrants and how that is perceived, and at what level is that at, general elections, local elections?
Well, we've been asked to look at specifically whether citizens, Irish citizens abroad, should have the right to vote in presidential elections. We haven't been asked to look at any of the other issues, whether they should be able to vote in general elections or not. And we'll be considering that in September. And this is really one of the reasons why I wanted to reach out to people in America here, and indeed in other countries, to really see if people have views on this matter. We would very much like to hear them in the form of submissions, and perhaps even at the time when we have the meeting, in terms of being present to make a case.
Right.
So that's really why I'm grateful for this opportunity with you, Adrian. But I would find it hard to say at this stage how that debate is going to go.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a certain amount of goodwill towards it.
Yeah.
It's again probably more complicated than might appear at first sight.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have decisions about, you know, which citizens abroad.
Absolutely.
You know, all the sort of detail, you know, the devil is always in the detail.
Right. Okay, presidential elections, current term of office for the presidency of Ireland is 7 years?
Yes. And the convention actually examined that question and recommended that it remain at 7 years and it not be reduced to five years. That was what we were asked to consider.
Okay, so now we're getting down to the crux of this. Since, for instance, just take the presidency, currently 7 years, your committee of 100, as you chair, took the submissions of many who, I'm sure, a goodly number thought 5 years, 4 years, whatever, but there was some reasoning in terms of making that concurrent with the political elections and whatever. So your committee has decided that really isn't as big an issue as some of the others.
Yes, and that was it was a fairly clear decision. I mean, on the 7 years, 57% voted that it should remain at 7 years and not be brought to 5 years. But the other thing we were asked to look at was if it went to 5 years, should the presidential election happen in tandem with the European and local elections?
Yeah.
And 80% of the convention said no to that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reasoning, as you know, as I would interpret, was people felt that presidential elections are of a different character than local and European elections. And you'd get
and
completely
rightly so.
Mixed
oh
up
my God,
with,
yeah.
with issues, local issues, and where you really need
As
to be,
in fact we did in the recent election.
So you see, I thought this was an example of just the good sense of the convention members actually arriving at the right decision.
Right.
I thought myself that there was, but I don't have a say, I mean, I'm not expressing a view one way or the other at the convention. I thought myself that there was actually quite a strong case for reducing the term from 7 years to 5 years, but I certainly didn't feel that it should be brought in, happen at the same time as the two other elections.
You have 100 members, 66 representing outside of the political arena.
Yes.
33 representing the political arena, and then your good self. Give me a feel, or leave us, try to let us know, in terms of, you began in December.
That was the formal opening, the first working meeting was in January.
Okay, yeah. So it started in January. If everything is on schedule, you should be finished with your report submissions. Are you on a timeline?
Yes, a year. But that doesn't count a possible extension for the any other business.
Okay, you got enough in a year.
Yes.
That's a lot to actually undertake in a year.
But we're on schedule.
I know.
Yeah.
And then there's 4 months this will actually go before the Oireachtas.
Well, as we hold the meetings, we write the reports.
Okay.
So we're not waiting until the end to write one.
So you're not going to land us.
No. We've already the meetings in January and in February are both the subject of reports, which are both lodged in the Houses of the Oireachtas. We're working on the report on same-sex marriage, which took place, the meeting took place in April. And we will finish our work on the electoral reform in June, and we will have that report in the Houses of the Oireachtas before the summer break.
Hmm. It's great, and still, when you look at it, the constitution that, as you have pointed out, has actually served Ireland well, even this is not a total radical gutting of the 1937, which is amazing in itself.
It is. And, you know, the very first day at the ceremonial opening, we had a perspective given by Judge Gerard Hogan of the High Court, who traced the origins of the Constitution, but then traced, if you like, commented on its survival, if you like, in the period post-1937. And he was definitely of the view, and he's a very considered voice, that the Constitution has served us well overall.
Hmm. Okay. How do those who have an interest in this, how are we going to follow what's happening? Or is there a website?
There is indeed. And in fact, one of the main things we said from the very beginning here, this will be as open as possible. So every submission that's made is put up on the website. It's all being live streamed. We're getting a lot of attention overseas.
Mm-hmm.
At the weekends we have it. And then, if you like, the debates are on the website as well. So in a sense, almost anything that has happened since we started our work in January is actually up on the website. And the website address is www.constitution.ie.
Okay. www.constitution.ie. .ie, not .com, not .org, .ie. We're delighted again to have you there, to have you with us. And on a personal level, you have been, the chief executive officer and the running concern worldwide for, it seems like forever to us, to be asked by the government to be kind of, buttonholed for something as significant as this. Did you have to scratch your head? Did you have to say, geez, I'll have to get back to you on that one?
I didn't take very long to do that. I mean, I considered it just an honour and a unique opportunity to make a contribution to the country.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know? And it couldn't happen at a better time.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's exciting.
Tom Arnold, we're delighted. Delighted to have you here. And I'm sure that there will be many who will have a very keen interest you know, in following, and that's, you know, on your website, and we'll watch it, and you get plenty of input.
Okay. Thank you very much, Adrian. Thank you.
Friends, the website again, www.constitution.ie. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.